Welcome to Iteration, a weekly podcast about programming, development, and design. My name is JP. I'm a software engineer at a tech real estate startup, and today I'm joined, as always, by John. John, how's it going?
It's going awesome. Hey, my name's John, and I run an agency that builds web and mobile apps. So we write code. That's what we do. I'm super stoked to go into our topic today because it is very near and dear to my heart. But before we do that, how are you doing, JP? We're kind of wrapping up the year here. We're recording this just before Thanksgiving, and I think that this will be released right around Christmas time. So ho, 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 everybody.
I'm doing really well. You know, it's raining, I think, for the second time all year in Southern California, which is great. I love giving this context of what the weather is like to listeners. You know what's also really funny is I was on the Los Angeles subreddit. Don't judge me. I think it's a fun subreddit to be on if you live in Los Angeles. And there was this post that was like, "Hey everybody, it's raining. It's like raining tomorrow. Please do everything you can in your power to make this happen. Wash your car. Schedule a roofer. schedule a wedding. Let's all make sure we can do everything to make sure that tomorrow it rains." Which I think was like the funniest like shit post I've seen in a while, just because it shows like how much it doesn't rain in Los Angeles ever.
I love that. That's so funny. And it's so true. Like when you schedule one of those things, the rare times you do, that's the day it's going to rain in Los Angeles. It's funny because when I travel, I always forget how much weather impacts other places. And I don't think about it in travel. And it's like this luxury we have in California that, you know, we can plan a hike and like not even think about it. Like we never check the weather. But yeah, that's great. And I'm loving the rain. It's such a cozy morning. I'm off today and tomorrow from work. So I'm just like full vacation mode. Getting into this podcast, I'm grooving on it. So with that, like let's get into this thing. So today we are going through Ruby on Rails. We both do a lot of Rails development. That's very much like day to day. Pretty much all I write is generally Rails all day long. And today we're going to be going through 5 reasons to love Rails, 5 reasons to hate Rails. And through that, like I'm hoping there's some really good insights you can pick up if you are a Rails developer out there. If you're curious about dabbling into Rails, like this is a great list to kind of start with. And I think it's always good to always be reassessing what technologies we're using. And I do think we'll do this like 5 love, 5 hate on some other technologies that we both use, whether it be React or whatever that looks like. If there's a specific one you want to see, like let us know. Maybe we'll get into it.
Yeah. So we both write Rails every day, and Rails is actually the technology of choice that I will reach for Greenfield apps. So even though there are some things I do hate about it, that's not to say that it's so much that I wouldn't choose it as my go-to.
Yeah, for sure. So, all right, with that, the first kind of love and hate for me is convention over configuration. That's like this term that's thrown around in Rails. But basically, it means there is a Rails way, TM, to do things. Like this is the approved and kind of blessed way handed down by the great DHH. David Hindemeyer Hansen, author of Ruby on Rails, and he's the like main tech guy over at Basecamp. And the Rails community is, there's very little split in it. Like we very much do align in a very similar direction, especially when compared to other communities. When you look at something like JavaScript or React, like there's a lot of different conventions and ways to go about it. And people who want to manage state one way, and people want to manage state another way. Where Rails has always been from day one, like, nope, we're going to tell you exactly how to do it, where to do it, where to stick your control, where to stick your views, and how it all wires together. For me, especially in the early days of my career, you know, 5 years ago, getting into software development, having a specific, like, this is how you do it was such an incredible win just to get moving quicker. There was less decisions to be made up front. And even now, as like I could do something that had more flexibility and had more power within it, Rails has a lot of flexibility and power, but there definitely is strong conventions within it. However, I still choose Rails to this day because it allows me to focus on higher level things, it allows me to focus on abstractions, system design, user interface, and it makes me make less decisions day to day. And I just know, like, oh, if I need to spin up this controller, this view, or accomplish this abstraction within my software, there is a given way to do it, and that's how I'm going to start. Doesn't mean I'm going to stick with it. Rules are made to be broken, but it makes things extremely productive, stable, and reliable. And as an agency, we move from, you know, we've had 8 or 9 different full stack software projects over the last 4 or 5 years, and I can still move from project to project pretty comfortably across multiple versions of Rails. Everything's very stable and runs really great because of these very strong conventions. It's also really easy to onboard new developers. We've worked several times with a couple pitch hitting contractors, and we needed support, I was able to bring someone in, bring them up to speed very quickly because there is such strong convention. It's not like, oh no, we write the JavaScript imports in this way or it's done in this specific way. It's like, no, there's really strong conventions on how that works. But that's like a reason to love it, but it's also kind of a reason to hate it.
Yeah, okay. Before we get into reasons to hate it, one thing I will say about convention over configuration is it makes it really, really easy to jump into a new project, which I love.
Yeah.
And it's like, to be productive, it's like, if I want to make an endpoint that spits out some data, I know exactly, it's like a formula, right? Like you go into your routes RB, you go to your controller. If it's touching some, like the database, you know, you have a model. And going on to a new project, you don't really have to like reverse engineer things so much when you want to figure out why some data is being spit out in some place or why something's happening the way it is. But I don't know. It just is so weird to me that it's like it has a bad name, like because it like puts you in a box, right? But for me, I just don't know why that would be such a bad thing, because like it's not like the opinions of DHH are so crazy. It's like, hey, have CRUD controllers for all of your objects. Put all of your controllers here. Put all of your models here. Your views have some weird like metaprogramming going on, so that if they have to be named a specific way. But it's not like, in my head, it's not so controversial that it's like, oh, I wish we didn't have that. Like, I'd rather have the flexibility of doing things my way.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe that's like maybe that's me being closed-minded, and maybe that's because I don't know much else, and so there's like other better ways of doing things. But that being said, where have you found convention over configuration being painful? And do you think that was a symptom of just like not thinking of your system design in such a way that could fit the model correctly? I don't know.
Yeah, what you're alluding to is how I think about it now. Because there was a season when I felt like I was growing out of Rails, where I was struggling to cram everything into controllers and models and to struggle to cram these into conventions. Like, but then I felt like I was constantly fighting against Rails. A good example of this is like modules or namespaces. So if you want to start like putting your controllers into subfolders and putting your views into subfolders to start organizing things. And you know, once you have two dozen controllers, it gets really unruly to manage. And it's really nice to start putting these things into kind of modules and namespaces. When you first start doing that, you feel like you're really fighting against the convention of Rails and trying to do that. The other one that initially I felt like I was fighting against is I was just putting way too much in my controllers and models. And so as a result, I'm like, where should this logic live? Like Rails doesn't have a good place for this to live. It's such a mess. But that was really before I understood the value of service objects, of decorators, of even like rake tasks. It's like there was a lot of stuff that I was trying to make Rails do, like kind of the wrong way to approach it. I do think that there is a huge gap between documentation and support for a brand new junior dev. There's tons of great Rails documentation. And on the very high end, if you're running an enterprise Rails, there's some really amazing documentation. But that middle ground, when you're running an app with 1,000 or so users, or you know, you're building a Ruby on Rails app with a couple other devs, and you're kind of in this middle ground, there's very little documentation. And in a lot of ways, it's easy to build systems in Rails that are a bit under-engineered and under-designed, or way over-engineered and over-designed. And I feel like in our space, there's this kind of growing world of kind of blue-collar tech where it's like, hey, we're a startup, we do really well, but you know, we don't have the kind of resources of a Facebook or an Open Door or a Thumbtack, like this actual like large engineering organization. And so, but to go back to the idea of convention over configuration, like I don't think it's a problem about convention over configuration. I think it's a more of an issue of how you try to use Rails and where to stick that thing. But I also understand, coming from like a JavaScript developer or a React developer, where you just kind of have an empty file structure and you just go, it can probably feel a bit limiting to have to stop and put it into the way that Rails wants you to put it in. And I kind of understand that. Like, you just want to get going. So it's definitely a catch 22 there.
Yeah, totally. I think I err on the side of loving the convention over configuration. That being said, I don't know. I think some of the pain stems from like once you start finally having a really large Rails app and you're like, there just has to be a better way. Like I can't have 50 controllers in this folder, right?
Yeah.
But then at the same time, like I just wonder, like what does Basecamp's code look like? You know, like there's no, I mean, maybe it is just like a super flat structure where the controllers folder just literally holds all of the controllers and no other subdirectories. Maybe not. I have no idea.
No, they namespace. Well, he's done a couple of YouTube tutorials and they do some namespacing, but it does feel like you're fighting the system. And I think the last point I'll make about convention over configuration in Rails is this idea of Rails magic TM, and like things just working. I will say, like, as I've matured in my software development journey, that is something that I get frustrated by sometimes. Like an example, and this is like a simple, silly example, but like the pluralizer tries to pluralize things that make no sense. You know, to me, I had a model that I was trying to interact with that was called content, and it made no sense to pluralize that into contents. Like the plural of content should be content. So it's like, you have to stop, you have to go to the pluralizer, you have to redefine this. And then like, you're constantly fighting against these routes. So instead of like, you know, content path, it's like content index path. And you have to prefix with the index because I chose to have this English word. It's just like, I get it. It's useful to have these routes auto-generated, but also that's one of the areas, the whole like Rails magic piece, because it can like all of a sudden be this got you and you're like 3 hours trying to figure out the right pluralization strategy. And it's like, that's bullshit. That is frustrating from time to time.
Yeah. It's like, I want my noun to be content. I don't want to change it. It makes the most sense for my domain. Just give me freaking content.
Which you can do, but you kind of have to like get under the hood and kind of tweak how that works. So, all right. Next up on the plate here, that's a lot on convention over configuration. This one I think is so great, which is, It's again, like the love and hate of it, but the reason to love it is it's very stable and reliable. It's just a very simple, boring framework. But at the same time, like on the hate side, like it's just super boring and it doesn't keep up with modern trends in a way. For me, the pro of this is it does not have this kind of shiny object syndrome. The community is pretty methodical and straightforward, and it's been very stable. And I think I've mentioned this on another show, but the first project I ever got paid to write Ruby on Rails for was, I think, almost 6 years ago now. And it was this like pretty advanced little form that you took pictures it's like a mobile first website where you can take pictures and you fill out this form and then it generates this PDF and mails this PDF report in. The company is still using it every single day with their dozen employees. And I have done one security update in the last 5.5 years. And it's just running and it's spaghetti code, but it like was very much built on just Rails conventions. And it's just very stable and reliable software. There's something about server rendered HTML and CSS that I feel like that thing's going to be running for the next 10 years. I'm not even going to look at it again. And neither will this company. Like, I feel like there's so much value of that in my job and what I do, knowing when I go back to it and open it back up, like it's going to work. I'm not going to have crazy dependency issues or updated packages. They're going to break all my shit. I just know it's going to work. But at the same time, and that's the other flip side, like it's kind of boring. Let's be real. It's kind of boring.
Yeah. I will say it's kind of nice that things are just like figured out. And I'm sure there was maybe like growing pains around like Rails before 0.1 or before version 1 and up until version 2 and 3. And finally, we've like stabilized, right? But like, I do love that it's stable and we're not just only now in 2019. In 2020, figuring out the best way to do something. I mean, every now and then we have things come out like, what is it? Like, what's the file uploader thing?
Active storage.
Active storage. There we go. I had the wrong verb. So we have things like active storage come out, which is like now the way to do like file uploads and stuff like that. But it's not like we're reinventing like, oh, now actually we think that model should be done this way, for example. Right. Whereas in JavaScript, it's like, oh, state management should actually be done this way. And I get that you have to have these struggles and you have to be on the bleeding edge and you have to keep pushing your boundaries and what the limits are and discovering new patterns. And I do think that's essential, which I think JavaScript is very much going through right now. It's like so crazy, right? Because like we have like ES 2015 come out and that like totally shifted how people think about JavaScript, because now it was like quote unquote more modern. And now like JavaScript is becoming even more modern every single day, supposedly. But I love that Ruby on Rails as a framework in general isn't like always reinventing the best way to do something, which I think is great.
Yeah. And even like some of the newer, more controversial conventions, a newer one, at least in the world of the history of Rails, would be like Turbolinx.
Right.
And it's very controversial and it is very different. Like you're not actually loading the page, you're swapping out the body with JavaScript. But even that like doesn't fundamentally break your workflows. Or, you know, another one would be Action Cable. That was a pretty big divergent, like, change for Rails on how to do, like, that live page updates. But even that, like, you can choose not to use it, and it doesn't fundamentally break your workflows. And with these newer changes of Action Text, Active Storage, and a couple other ones that are coming up, they're pretty big changes on how to manage uploads and how to manage rich text in an application. But at the same time, you can keep doing it the way you've been doing it, and it's not going to break. Like, it's going to keep running stable. And so, you know, there's definitely that world of it being boring, and there's that give and take of stability equals boring. And there's, you know, there's a piece of me that gets a bit frustrated with how slow we can move. I feel like Rails community does not have good JavaScript conventions. Mm-hmm. Like, I never know what the right way is to spin up some Vue or even write some stimulus code in a Rails app. Like, we haven't figured that out really well, and how to write JavaScript really well in Rails. And it's 2020 now, almost. Like, you have to write JavaScript in your app. Like, you can't page reload every freaking thing. Like, we've got to get some good JavaScript tooling in place. So that, I think, is the biggest pain point I have with its stability. It's like very slow to adapt modern JavaScript ecosystems. But I think partly because it just needs to calm the fuck down. Like, once it calms down, I'm pretty sure that we'll adopt it a lot more broadly once we have something a bit more stable out there.
Okay, cool. So I think this is a good segue into what might be a long-winded rant from me about JavaScript and Rails. So feel free to stop me at any time. But so the gripe is that, I guess we categorize this as like not keeping up with modern trends is sort of the gripe.
For sure.
At least front-end trends, right? Because like you have JavaScript, you have like React and Vue off to the races, and all these other things like Gatsby, which makes it really easy to spin up static websites. And there's a bunch of tooling in the JavaScript world now that makes it really easy to spin up a client-side app and deploy it just as easily as like Git Push Heroku Master, which was like my bread and butter. There's literally the equivalent in the JavaScript world. But when I reach for Rails, and I guess I'm sort of weird in that like I love working with JavaScript too, but it's weird because when I reach for Rails as my tool on a greenfield project, there's always a little bit of me that wants to use some React, right? But I don't know. I've gone with this approach in the past to only sprinkle in React where I need it, right? So if there's like, if I need to, for example, drag and drop something, or if I need to have like some dynamic thing that it's just easier for me to write React in, if there's like some bit of state management that I need, like if I just want to toggle something, I'll either do that with like CSS or like vanilla JavaScript. But if there's like any sort of state management that I might need to do inside of a component, I'll reach for React. But then I start to like get in this weird middle ground where it's like, okay, I'm kind of writing a lot of React and I stick it into my ERB, and I'm like on this path of like, should I just write a spa? Like, should I just do a full
right.
It's like, should I have just made this like an API only thing and then just done like a JavaScript app? Because then like, you know, you write one component, it starts out as a sprinkle, and then you're like, well, actually I need to like, it would be nice to route over to this component, which then kind of fucks things up, because then you have like a JavaScript router and then you have like your own router. And then you sort of start to conflate like what is like a route and like what is a page, like a page. Does that make sense?
At that point, I'm conflating what is reality.
Yeah.
And I think that that's when it's pushing too far. And like, that is where you maybe should consider doing a single page app. And this is something that I've been literally 2019. I was like, I'm gonna solve this in 2019. So on different client projects, I've used React, I've used Vue.js, I've used Stimulus to figure out like what is the right way to get some interactive, like non-page reloady, modern front-end development done on top of Rails that makes sense. And to me, the thing I found that makes most sense is Stimulus, only because you're able to not have to rewrite all your controllers. Like, it's coupled to Rails in a way that feels very comfortable. And you also have a very clear place to like put your JavaScript. Like, it goes in JavaScript's controllers, and you literally have a JavaScript controllers folder. And it just makes way more sense for me. But you're not going to get the same level. You can in theory, but not easily. You're not going to get the same level of interaction and state management and be able to leverage existing libraries. And that's the thing that is like with React, you can import so much tooling that can help what you're doing in a way that you can't with something like Stimulus or even Vue, arguably. Because Vue, again, is like another like lighter weight, really fantastic way to do a lot of interesting interactions on top of Rails. Like I did this e-commerce project. We had this really advanced cart that managed all the state of the inventory and the discounts applied and no page reloads, like add and remove items. It's like really more modern front end stuff, really pushing me and like trying to get a more modern front end framework. But again, like in that case with Vue, I had to write a whole set of controllers just to manage that cart status. And it's just like really, and but at least with Vue compared with React in Rails, there is a strong convention around where to stick your logic, like where your JavaScript goes. And it's like, it is a place and it makes more sense. I feel like a trend I've seen a little bit, a couple projects is Preact, but I haven't looked into it enough beyond like looking at the initial landing page. But it seems like a really interesting middle ground between React and some of these other options like a Vue.js or a Stimulus. Have you heard of Preact at all and know the right place for that?
I don't, but I thought, I don't know. The only thing I know about Preact is that it's supposed to be like a more lightweight React. I thought it was
exactly right.
I thought it was exactly React, but the bundle size was just smaller. I don't know enough to speak to it, actually.
Yeah, I think it's a neutered React that is influenced by Vue.js. But if you're looking for JavaScript sprinkles, I think this is a really, if you're comfortable with React, you love Rails, and you're looking for like JavaScript sprinkles, I think this is a really good place to look. I've seen a lot more Rails apps like adapting Preact because it's less like JSX. Because with React, it's, you know, it's not as immediately HTML friendly in the same way that other things are, where this is like, no, you're just extending the existing DOM. You're not trying to like have this whole new virtual DOM abstraction, which you can do in React, obviously. I don't want to limit what is there, but I totally agree with you. And I think that's one of my biggest frustrations about the stability of Rails is its inability to really adapt to modern frameworks and import modern tooling in a way that's just like really easy and consistent. You're kind of fighting the system there right now.
Yeah, I think for me moving forward, I'm just going to pick either full-blown API mode and then have like a separate like repository for my front end, or just like really invest in ERB. Even though I kind of hate writing ERB just because I don't know, there's something weird about writing. I'm going to sound like really hypocritical because JSX and ERB, it's kind of like, you know, very similar, I would say, in that like it looks like HTML or XML even. But there's something about ERB that just feels very weird. It feels like it's like half in, you know, it's like my foot's like, I'm like kind of halfway in the door because
almost HTML.
Yeah, it's almost HTML, but it's like kind of Ruby. But whereas JSX is like full on. No, that's not true, because you can write HTML.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You could write full blown HTML and it's like valid JSX most of the time, except for
most of the time. Yeah.
Anyways, OK, let's move on.
But on that subject of it, like writing ERB, and like you're saying, I think I'm going to either pick full HUDless or go and really lean into the Rails ecosystem and let it be server rendered. I think that's one of the big pros and cons I want to talk through is the fact that it is a server rendered application. Like there's this whole piece of the single page app world and the React world that it's like having to tack back onto it the idea of server rendering for like SEO and page loads and all those other benefits you get from having pages cached on a sitting on a server and ready, like this idea of having it server rendered. To me, all of that feels like such a hack, like to get that working in a way that works really well, to get the performance and get the SEO benefits of having a server rendered application. When you're dealing with a single page app, it all feels super hacky to me. And so I love the simplicity of just there is the file, there's the ERB or HTML, it's close to HTML, and it just renders and loads very quickly. It runs really great. And like the idea that it's just incredibly stable and you know exactly what the other person's going to get, what they're going to see and how that's going to render out. I think there's just a lot of benefit to having a very stable and simple server rendered application. But again, at the same time, like that is not a very modern approach to have everything like sitting wait and everything is a new call to the server and fetching that new HTML page and pulling it down. Like that's obviously some, there's some cons to that. And they come in like interactivity and they come in performance from time to time. But it's weird because at the same time that it can be a performance burden, it can also be a performance win. being server rendered. So it's like one of those things that is like so odd, because if you focus too much on being a single page app, then it like can take so long to actually load up the app if you're not careful of how you build that out. And like, yeah, okay, once it loads, you can get some performance gains by then like having instant interactivity. But at the same time, you can get like a Rails app written really lightweight is so fucking fast. It's crazy how fast a Rails app can be. Probably not at the scale of millions of users, but in my world, it's incredibly fast if you are careful with how you write your code. But anyway, that's my two cents puking about server rendering.
Yeah, it's nice that you don't have to like bring in a library. It's just
right.
It's just there. You don't
it's
have
there.
There's not like all this fucking boilerplate that you have to bring in just so that you can get some like SEO benefits, which is great. Yeah, I guess the downside is that like it's not hip and cool and fast like without a page reload, right? But like now that you have like things like Turbo Links, I mean, I don't know if I've ever gone fully invested in Rails without any front end framework where it was just like ERB, Turbo Links, vanilla JavaScript here and there. But I'd be interested to see how that feels as a user versus like interacting with like a full blown single page app. And I bet, you know, I bet honestly, if you did it like the Rails way, the DHH way, which is Turbo Links plus very lightweight JavaScript, everything server rendered, I bet it feels just as good with Turbo Links like hot swapping things out and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's surprising. It's interesting though, because there's so many factors that can influence performance, like what other content's on the page, what is it swapping out, that it's hard to say. But I will say, I think it was late last year, during my last Christmas break, I wrote a to-do app in three frameworks, and it was really interesting. So I wrote it kind of the way that I was doing kind of old school Rails, which is not really embracing Turbo Links and having page reloads for everything. I did it using Turbo Links plus Stimulus on Rails, which is kind of like the best of both worlds. Like how fast can you make a Rails app? And then I did it in React as like through this tutorial and like did a to-do app in React. Now, of course, like at the end of the day for just a little to-do app, there was almost zero perceptible difference between any of the three. I will say the like old school way of building the Rails app that was reloading the page every time definitely had some hesitation, but between Rails, Stimulus, and Turbo Links and React, there was zero interactive difference. Like it felt just as snappy between the two, because I think there is this line of perception. Like once you get below that, like a few milliseconds, like it's not going to make any difference at that point. Once you're under 100 milliseconds, whether you're 90 or 75 milliseconds, your page load is going to feel incredibly snappy. But I'm not a performance expert. I don't write blazingly fast sites. But I do find it interesting that the JavaScript community is like so... I feel like static sites is so hot right now. And I'm like, wait, we are literally back where we started 10 years ago. Like, that's how I first started writing websites. It's like logging to a server, writing an HTML file and adding CSS into it. Like, how is this a new invention? Like, why is this so incredible? But like, it's fast. Like HTML and CSS is incredibly fast and reliable and stable. So there's something about, and I understand server render is not the same as static. I get that. But at the same time, like there's a component there that there's that simplicity and speed of it. But again, not a performance expert.
That's interesting that you wrote three to-do apps. I think a little bit of the whole perception is just like us being really critical about the apps that we build. Because like once you build something, you immediately use it, right? And so like if you built something that was server rendered and then you immediately built something that wasn't server rendered and you placed them side by side, you're going to be very nitpicky about like how it works because like you literally just built it, right? But I think about like bank apps that are like on probably some legacy shit where literally everything is a page reload to the point where I'm like, okay, I'm like kind of noticing this, but that's just me as like a developer noticing things and not like as an actual user. And I'm not ever like, oh man, I can't believe there was a page reload when I went from like my checking account to my savings account. Like, no, it's totally fine. Like, I think most of the times those things as users, there's like a product aspect of it too, right? And like what expectations are of like when I click this button, this should happen. And I know that contradicts what I've said in previous episodes where I was bitching about page reloads. But I really do think that like context matters, and like you don't always need it.
Right. I think that's the biggest thing, is that context matters and what you're doing is different. Like a setting screen, like there's no reason to build that whole thing. If it's something that a user accesses once a quarter, once a month, and you know, to reset their password or change their avatar photo, like do you really need to do that all as a single page app? It's like probably fine that it's server rendered. Like it's just fine. And it's interesting too how, like, I feel like there is some idea of speed being imperceptible to users, because I feel like half the time users think my computer's being slow. Like that's what they think. They don't think this JavaScript author didn't know what they were doing, or this software developer sucked. Like that's not their initial thought. They're thinking like, oh, why is my phone slow? Why is my internet slow? Which is like a benefit to us because we can kind of hide behind the internet connectivity there. But at the same time, Amazon's done a ton of interesting studies about how milliseconds of page loads will impact purchase and conversions and like increase consumer trust. So I do think it's something that's important to consider, but I just think like keep in mind what interactions are heavily used and how you can optimize those interactions. I think that's the really important part. All right, so moving down our list here, I love this one. To me, what I love about Rails is it's just Ruby, and Ruby is beautiful. I think that Ruby is a very elegant language for me and the style of my brain works and the syntax, the entire language, I'm very comfortable with it. It reads nicely, it writes nicely, it's performant. I love the Ruby language. In the little bit of languages I've dabbled in others, which I have, I've gone down Python and PHP and a couple other languages and frameworks. Ruby to me just feels so right and it feels very comfortable to me. And like, this is just a preference thing. I have no judgment if you love React or you love PHP. And like, if you're productive in that, more power to you. I think that's incredible. But for me, I think the Ruby language is like, there's so much about it being dynamic and object oriented. And like, it very much reads like English. The syntax is very forgiving. There's so much that I love about Ruby. And I love that Rails is Ruby.
Yeah, me too. And we've talked about this at length about how, for example, like, you know, your models file, you don't need to have, it doesn't need to like have a one-to-one to your database, right? Like you can just make models, which are just objects.
Poros, plain old Ruby objects.
Oh, good old Poros. What I love about Rails is that I could just open up like the console and create new objects in like a sandbox there. You know, like I can just like spin up new objects, see how they interact with each other. And you sometimes forget that it's just Ruby, right? Like you can just make as many objects as you want. And you don't have to like think of it as like learning a new language when you jump into like the Rails framework, even though it gets a lot of like crap for being like super heavyweight, like, oh, I only use Sinatra because it's like closer to just like to the metal or whatever.
Ruby,
but like, to be honest with you, Rails really is just Ruby too, which I think is really good.
I think one of the things to hate here that you wrote down, I think, JP, is forms in Rails, especially if you're not in Ruby all day, every day, it can be really frustrating. Any ERB specifically, I think there's a lot of different approaches and tooling that try to make this better, but forms in ERB, I agree with you. Like just trying to get the right class passed into a form component, like within Rails, it can be a total nightmare sometimes.
Yeah. Okay. So I recently jumped back into some ERB after having not really touched too much of it in a while. And I noticed that there's this new thing called form tag, right? I think that's like a new thing. It used to be like form width or form four. But now there's like form tag, which kind of...
It's always been around, but I think more people are starting to use form tag versus form four and form width. That's my understanding.
Okay. Yeah. And so I guess that might be like one of the few things where it's like, oh, we found a new way to do like the best way to do this thing. And I don't know why it like just breaks my brain. So this like Ruby ERB abstraction over forms, especially like nested forms,
for some reason it
like breaks my brain. Like I'd rather write like a sorting algorithm than do a fucking form, like a nested form association. Maybe that's like my lack of understanding of like how data is supposed to be transmitted over forms.
No, it's shitty and so hard. And like, I feel like I've been working in Rails now for a few years. And like when I have to write a form with nested with a module namespace, like I've put this like into a module of like users. Mm-hmm. It's like, I have to do this like users posts form and it's like a nested form. Yeah, it can be a total clusterfuck trying to figure that out. And like you do a form four, then a form four again to like get that. And then how do you instantiate that? How do you handle the data? I totally agree that forms can be a mess. But I wonder, my argument like against that would be, isn't that just complicated? even if you wrote that in HTML, isn't that form just a complicated form? But I will say, like, forms in Ruby in ERB, I do feel like I'm fighting struggling to understand the syntax. And one specifically that I always fuck up is select boxes.
Oh my God.
Using ERB and like trying to get the styling to pass through. Oh my God, it's so annoying. I always just go to an old project where I finally somehow got the right magic incantation syntax and copy paste it in. And like, there's very little docs on it online on like how to get the select box, like rendering from the objects in the database. Oh my God, it can be such a nightmare.
I actually do think that it would be simpler to write it in just plain HTML. That said, I always have to like look up the syntax for that because like, especially with like accessibility, you have to do like, you have to like make sure that you wrap the whatever and that like the label.
For sure.
Like the label ID has to match like the input ID and shit like that. But it feels weird to me not using the helpers in ERB templates. Let's talk about that for a second. So like, instead of writing like a link, like an A tag with like an href and doing like a link, like to a relative path.
To link to.
Yeah. To me, that feels weird. Like I shouldn't be doing that. Do you have that same reflex? So for me, it's like with forms too. It's like, shit, I can't just like write a regular form. No, I have to use like the Rails ERB helper method.
And that was the tip that I was just going to give. It's like, just write fucking HTML. Like it's fine. And so here's where I stand on that. I definitely try to first write it in the ERB syntax. So for links, for whatever those, for submit boxes, whatever they look like, but specifically like getting a link to look like a button and have it build like Bootstrap properly or Foundation properly or whatever front end framework you're working in can be like, you're just absolutely fighting it and playing the dance of like, wait, where do I pass the class? Like, or like, for example, you need a 2-line button that's a link. So a button with like a big text and then subtext below. It's like there's HTML that needs to pass. And then you're like passing in .raw.html into the string. Like the whole thing becomes a clusterfuck. So the second I'm fighting ERB, I break out of ERB and I just write HTML or JavaScript.
Okay.
And that's my rule. And so like 9 times out of 10, it's written and it's perfectly fine using the templates of ERB, using their convention. But that edge case, I let it be an edge case. I just write HTML. Like I know HTML. It's so easy to find the right docs for getting that select box, right? And what's nice is because you have string interpolation, you can just pop in your Ruby you need or your route you need, and it's dynamic. And I haven't seen any performance issues. In fact, at times I've seen the opposite, that actually writing the HTML was slightly better performant and it felt more right to me versus the helpers. So I don't think there's any problem with doing that. As long as it's well documented and it makes sense, just go for it. Okay. And that's the thing. Like, I feel like people give Rails a lot of shit. This is like just a general thing. People give Rails a lot of shit, but it's like, you don't have to do it the way they're saying it. Like, you can break the rules. Like, no one's saying you can't break the rules. Like, I'm not looking over your shoulder. Ultimately, like there's a lot of good conventions there, but you don't have to follow them. Like you could not even follow any of the controller patterns, any of the patterns there. And I think if you are a competent developer, there's times when you need to break the rules and understand like, oh yeah, this makes sense to have a fifth route. It's like, oh my God, you have a fifth route for your, it's like you're breaking out of CRUD. Why are you doing that? Wait, CRUD. Yeah, okay, fifth route. fifth action, I should say, in your controller. But yeah, I guess that's my rant over.
Okay, yeah. I don't know why I just have this like weird like OCD thing that's like, if I see like a link to next to an A tag, like, I don't know why that just like, that just something inside of me is like dying because I see that, but like, it's totally fine. Like they're just helper methods, right? They're literally just methods in Ruby that make it so that you can like show like a select box or like a link or like a form or whatever. But maybe that's just something that I have to get over. But
yeah, and just one last thing on forms and tags in general. Like there's a lot of other conventions that are pretty widely adopted in the Rails community. You know, HAML is like a better templating approach, and Simple Form is like a huge form library that does take a lot of the pains out of the stuff out that are pretty well documented. So there's a lot of other approaches, but I agree that this is something I hate about Rails, that forms can be a total pain in the ass, and just ERB in general can be a total pain in the ass.
Yeah. Okay. I have one thing to spin off of libraries like that is that I've noticed that thing. I don't know if Simple Form is with this, but I noticed that like some libraries that like make things like easier are like tightly coupled to like jQuery and also tightly coupled to Bootstrap. So it's like
100%.
It's like as if all Rails developers use jQuery and Bootstrap. It's like, yeah. I get that there was a time in my life where that was definitely true, like 2015 maybe.
Yeah.
2016, where like everything was just jQuery and Bootstrap. Right. But oh man, I just wish that they weren't so tightly coupled to Bootstrap, especially. Like, you don't need to couple your library
with
Bootstrap.
That makes no sense to me. I couldn't agree more. And I'm a pretty heavy Bootstrap user. I don't use it on every project, obviously, but I'm a heavy Bootstrap user. And even that pisses me off as well. It's like, really? We're going to just assume we're using Bootstrap? And the jQuery thing too. It's like, I don't need jQuery on this. I'm not interested in importing that whole thing just so I can get your date picker. Like, come on.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I think one thing that's like amazing about Rails is like really stale old tutorials are just totally relevant. And that goes back to the idea that it's like boring and stable, but like that is so fucking cool that something from 5 years ago on how to manage whatever is like still totally works. And that's crazy.
Yeah, I love going to like a Stack Overflow post where I like see an answer and then the person will like update it for like Rails 4 and 5. And it's like such a minor thing that like honestly like does not even matter most of the time. It's like, well, actually, you can do it this way in Rails 5 now. There's like this way to do it. But like their original solution still holds up. And it's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing. And I think a lot of this goes back to convention over configuration too. Because like if I want to do like what is it? I always forget how to do polymorphic objects in my database.
Sure.
And I can rely on that like 2011 Stack Overflow answer on like how to do it because it still holds true.
I've been on that 2011 answer like a dozen times. I know exactly the answer you're talking about. It still holds true and it's amazing. But I think the downside of that that like brings me a lack of confidence in who I am as a developer from time to time is this idea that all Rails devs are just script kiddies or like we all just kind of follow DHH. And like, there is a piece of me that is like, I always prefix what I do as like when like I'm talking to other devs at a meetup or something and they're like, oh yeah, cool. You're a software developer. Like, what do you work in? And like, I always use the word just, oh, I'm just a Rails guy. And like, I feel like I have to do that because I have to acknowledge like, I play with kiddie toys. And like, I love that quote about Twitter. What was it? That it's like preschool code. Have you heard this? Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah. The person who was criticizing Twitter for using Rails was like, it's like preschool something or other.
Yeah, it's like, it's Tinker Toys or something like that. And I think there is an element that it is. But to some degree, I'm like very proud that I can build as much as I do, as large and as stable as I can with such simple tools. Like there's something about me that's like really cool. Like I kind of feel like a photographer who shoots film. It's like kind of a hipster cool thing to do. But at the same time, like it feels kind of shitty sometimes to like be on the old boring thing. And like that's what I identify as. But I'm going to say it now. I'm going to start dropping the just and I'm going to own the title more and lean into it. Like I'm a Rails dev. I feel like I'm admitting something here. Hi, my name is John and I'm a Rails dev. I love Ruby. I also love JavaScript and I love modern frameworks as well. But my day-to-day and my go-to is Rails. But there is that stigma around it and it is something that I don't love. Of just like, you know, if I have a Ruby sticker on my laptop, I'm going to put a JavaScript sticker next to it because I don't want people to think I'm just a Ruby guy.
Yeah, I think, oh boy, I could go on a whole long-winded rant on this, but I do think that a lot of that insecurity, which I feel at times too, is that I think there's something broken in like tech culture where everyone has to be like the smartest, craziest, fucking Edward Snowden, Mark Zuckerberg, like algorithm like hacker. Yeah, like you have to be this person. So it's like, if I say like, hey, I'm a Ruby developer, and the person next to me is like, oh, you're a Ruby developer, I actually write in Go. Or like, right. I only write in machine code, actually. It's like, okay, no one said that, but like that's certainly what it feels like. Like, actually, I write all in zeros and ones, and I know how to translate that directly into, it's like, fuck off. And I think it's toxic for our culture. Maybe I shouldn't say fuck off, but like it's toxic for our culture because we have a big problem with like insecurity and imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
And it certainly doesn't help when people are so ready to like put you down or just be like, oh, you write in Ruby. And it's like, dude, it's a programming language. Like, you know, even tools that are like if this then that, where you can like drag around things, like that's programming too. You know, like programming doesn't just come in the form of like writing code, and I think people forget that. And I don't know. I guess that's all I have to say about it. But I do think it's shitty that like people are so ready to make other people feel bad about.
They have
like,
an air of judgment around it.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think like as a community, I couldn't agree more that this idea of this like elitism around kind of what languages and frameworks you know and what you write in and like getting closer to the metal. And Like, I will fall into that from time to time. It's like, oh, you know, even when we had John on the podcast the other day, I think it was the second John we had on the podcast, where he was writing like machine code to the metal for processors. I'm just like, holy hell, like, you're a programming god. I could never get anywhere near that close to the metal and understand that. Like, that's computer science in a whole way that I'll never touch. Like, I don't do any computer science in my job. That's not what Ruby on Rails is. Like, sure, I write a sort algorithm. Not really. Like, not really. Like, there's times when I've had to write algorithms, but like, that's not what my job is. It's not computer science. And so trying to like respect each other and the different values that those have in the world. And also at the same time, understanding that different languages and frameworks is just tools preference. There's really not a better or a worse. There's sure objective performance measures, but that doesn't make it worse, a worse choice for the thing you're trying to accomplish. And so, yeah, I agree with you. It's like, fuck off, man. Calm down. But at the same time, like, I just wish that the whole community was a bit more open to the idea that maybe their tool isn't the best tool for every single job and that we have different tools. And I feel like the community is maturing and we are moving in those directions, but there still is like this idea of like, oh, all hail the 10X hacker ninja. And I don't know, I would love to break out of that. Cause I think to some degree, like that leads into a lot of the diversity issues we have. Cause like that oftentimes it can be these stereotypes of who those people are and what they look like and who they should be like. And it's like, I don't know what a software developer should look like in the year 2020. It can look like anybody. Anybody can do this shit. And I want anybody and everybody to be welcome in this community. So as much as we can be welcoming and open in other kinds of languages and frameworks and backgrounds, like, I am all for it. I don't want anyone to sense any judgment or perceptions of like they're less than because they write in a different, like, because they're building Shopify apps. Like, you're doing something great for someone who has a business to run. Like, you're providing value in the world. Like, that's what should matter. All right, I'm done preaching.
Yeah, no, couldn't agree more. Yeah, but you know what? I'm proud to be a Rails script kitty.
That's right. No more just. I'm going to drop the just from now on. That's one of my New Year's resolutions. Cool. That was super fun. I'm excited to get into that for possibly other languages and frameworks. Any last thoughts on Rails pros and cons, JP?
No final thoughts other than I will continue writing Rails for the foreseeable future. It will continue. It will always be my first choice.
Yeah.
So that being said, yeah, continue choosing it.
Awesome. So let's go into some picks. I just want to, before we go into picks, I want to mention it is upcoming week of Christmas. So I hope that you guys step away from work, step away from the computer screen, enjoy the fireside with a cold or a hot beverage, and enjoy family. And like, as you're thinking that through, like, take some time. And that leads into my first pick, which, as you're taking some time away from your computer, away from work, there is a Netflix show that I would strongly recommend called Abstract, The Art of Design. And I think if you are at all involved with UI, UX design, or even just backend technical design systems, I think inherently most programmers are designers, whether it's technical or whether that's visual designers. There's a show, Abstract, and basically it follows all these different types of design people. So it's from architects to like the guy who designs Nike shoes to a set designer to all types of different types of designers and breaks down their processes and evaluates their backgrounds. And it's just people at the top of their class in all these different fields. And it was incredibly inspiring. They just did season two. If you haven't checked it out yet, I would strongly recommend. And they did one, the specific one that I'll pick is they did the UX designer from Instagram.
Oh.
And so they broke down his process, his background, and they like literally like let you into an Instagram redesign of the profile page. Like, it was really cool. It's only an hour. I wish it was longer because it was so good. I feel like that could be its own series in itself. But that one specifically, which is in season two, which breaks down kind of the Instagram design process, his background, and how he got this title of like literally head of international design of Instagram. So it was really inspiring and really great stuff.
Yeah, I've caught a couple episodes of season one, and I gotta say, it's filmed really well. Like the, what's the term? Like filmography?
Cinematography?
There we go. Cinematography. Jesus Christ. Filmography. What am I even saying? Yeah. The cinematography of it is really nice, yeah. And I would
the one
highly
season
recommend.
The one on season on fonts too was absolutely incredible. Yes. There's a font designer that was so good. Anyway, that's my pick for this holiday season.
Okay, cool. So my pick is a non-technical not even close to being in the realm of technical. So my pick is our socks, but they're a very specific brand of socks, and it's called Bombas. And they do a cool thing where when you buy a pair, I think they donate a pair. It's kind of like how Tod's did a thing.
Yeah.
But not only is it cool that they donate pairs to those who are less fortunate, they are just really damn good socks. So I got my first pair of socks for Christmas like 2 years ago from my sister, and they have just held up as like the best pair of socks in my sock drawer. And they also look really cool. They're both really cool looking and really comfortable. So socks are something that I love getting for Christmas. I don't know if that's like a lame adult thing.
We're getting old, man. That's what that means.
But I don't know. There's something about a good pair of socks that's both comfortable, doesn't like ride down. So I recently just like revamped my sock drawer, and I was looking for a really good pair of like no-show socks, and Bombas has a really good pair that's like both comfortable, it's not too thin, and they don't like slip, so they're halfway on your foot like midday, which I think is awesome. And I don't know, I couldn't speak more highly about socks, which now that I say this out loud, because I have never said something out loud like this before, I realize how weird it sounds, but if you're looking for socks, I would highly recommend checking them out.
Cool. I'll tag on to that a little bit in that I think it's insane that we spend so much money on the clothes we wear on the outside of our body and not more money on the ones that like touch our skin all day long. So like if your underwear is uncomfortable, like stop wearing uncomfortable underwear and socks. Like spend the money to get something nice. So I like your pick, and I think it's just because I'm getting old. I start spending more and more on my underwear and less on my jeans.
Yes.
I think that's what happens.
Exactly. Yeah, I love that.
Awesome.
Cool. Thank you all so much for listening. Everyone have a great holidays, and we will catch you next year.
In the future, in 2020. All right. Thanks for listening.
Peace.
We were both like trying to wrap that episode. That was so funny. I was like, well, okay. Yeah. Let's stop talking about underwear. Can we quit?